the guy who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gijp.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself, Jay and Buster are delighted to welcome along Motherwell Chief Operating Officer Alan Burrows after a very, very busy transfer window, one of the hardest working men in Scottish football. It's an absolute delight to welcome you along, mate.
I only got an easier job title, just so when the next time I come back on it rolls off the tongue a wee bit easier than that one.
Aye, it wasn't comfortable, that's for sure. it's brilliant to have you along, mate. As I say, it's obviously been a hugely busy couple of months. Overhaul at Motherwell like never before, I would imagine, in terms of a transfer window. How do you reflect on it all now that the kind of dust has settled a wee bit?
Yeah, it was. I think the chairman made a statement on Friday, and I suppose I can just echo his comments that I think in an ideal world, no football club really wants to be recruiting 17 and moving 17 on in any one window. It's probably a wee bit too much upheaval at one particular time. But at the same time, again, repeating what he said, I think probably everybody there back in the last season probably would agree that probably a freshness was required, that we had to mix up a little bit and get some new players in. I think Stephen Robinson had a plan of how he wanted to play, what he wanted to do, and then recruited accordingly. And I think that's been borne out over the last couple of months. He's been, him alongside Martin Foyle, head of recruitment, and myself have been extremely busy over almost since the day after the Kamarnock game to try and recruit new players into the squad and trying to fit in a system that he wants to play. So yeah, it's been quite strategic, probably the most strategic window I've been involved in I think six or seven that I've done now in this role that I've experienced, that manager really having a real plan of what he wants, how he wants them to fit into the team, also the types of character that he was very, very insistent on. That is actually for the first time I've really delved into that level of detail when it comes to recruitment about the guys and what personality. So he and Martin Foyle done a lot of homework on particular individuals and who he wanted to recruit. So yeah, it was both enjoyable, stressful and interesting all at the one time. So and I think, you know, sitting here a couple of days after the window's closed, certainly on paper anyway, I think we can be fairly happy with what we've done.
The build-up to the close of deadline day, it was kind of a lot of speculation, particularly with guys that were rumoured to be leaving the club. It's quite refreshing to see the fact that we seem to be in a much more kind of forceful position. We don't entertain derisory offers anymore, where I think in the past, and we talked about it last week in the podcast, I kind of felt that quite often Motherwell have forced their assets out the door. We're so desperate to sell a player. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore, and I think people are quite excited by that, in the sense that we've retained guys like Chrissy Cadden, Lou Moult. It's a very nice position to be in.
Yeah, I think what I would say is that position has been something that's been quite deliberate from our point of view. I think I've mentioned this in previous interviews, that as a supporter myself, first and foremost, I mean, I've sat with you guys before, I've sat with other supporters all across Scotland in games, watching on Motherwell, and I probably agree with you, losing players for what I think I would certainly perceive at that time is to be less than their true value. You know, when you sit in my chair, you actually realise that sometimes that what you think is value and what actually is out there and what's available and what people are prepared to pay are quite often different things. But at the same time, I think we would all agree that, you know, I mean, I read a tweet the other day there to say that we actually get more money than for Ben Hennigan than we did for the likes of Jamie Murphy, Ross McCormack, Jim O'Brien, you know, Darren Randolph, you know, Mark Reynolds, you know, and to think of it in that context. And that's just no disrespect to Ben by any manner of means, but if you think about that context and you think of some of those players I just mentioned, it's unbelievable to think that in some cases, in fact, Ben Hennigan went for two or three times what some of those players went for, which is quite incredible. So yeah, I mean, that's been a very deliberate from the club's point of view, and I should say in partnership with the Welsh Society as well. Obviously, we have regular dialogue with the society board. We have also have a supervisory board, which is a kind of hybrid of both. And the discussions between all three, I think it's been very paramount for us in terms of the model we operate at the football club. That if it's going to work, if fan ownership is going to work, if you know, living within our means is going to work, then what we really need to ensure is that we get proper value for our players, and that sometimes means taking a little bit of risk when it comes to rejecting offers. It means being a wee bit more aggressive in how you play it and how you handle it. So that's what we've tried to do. We've knocked back a lot of offers this window, and we can only continue to do that. And as I said, referring to Jim McMahon's statement on Friday, we can only really continue to do that, pardon me, if we continue to have the support of the fans through the society and through buying season tickets and, you know, through commercial sponsorship deals and partnerships that they have. You know, everybody, you know, because we've not got a benefactor, because we've not got a consortium of people who put money into the club other than the supporters, then, you know, without their backing, we wouldn't be able to do this sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's been encouraging for me. It's been encouraging, I think, for the people who have been involved in both the club and the society, that have been able to take a little bit of a harder line, and hopefully going forward we can take an even harder one and try and drive up, you know, our ability to trade in the transfer market, because that and cup finals really, as we've always said, are the two real main drivers of making money when you're a football club at this level. So, yeah, it's been quite satisfying to see Ben going for a good fee. It's been satisfying to see Marvin Johnston going to Middlesbrough and us going to sell him from it. And we'll hopefully we'll continue to do that over the weeks and months ahead.
Jay, we go into the transfer window, and I think we knew going into the final day that there was going to be speculation around guys like Louis Moll, Chris Cadden, Ben Hennigan. I think as an assessment of the situation, to only lose one out of the three and to knock back what is a substantial amount of money, clearly, for Cadden as well, it's quite refreshing to see. And I think it just kind of puts a wee bit of an emphasis on how much of a good feeling there is about the club just now.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I think there was a tweet, I think, the day before deadline day, and it was a Motherwell fan just basically suggesting that this could be our worst transfer window yet. You know, the idea that we could lose, you know, Hennigan, Cadden, Moult. And of course, you know, how you view a successful transfer window obviously depends on, you know, whether you're considering the playing squad, whether you're considering, you know, the business model we've got. At the end of the day, you know, if our business model is to produce our own youngsters and to bring in guys like Hennigan and Moult and sell them for profit, then you actually want to be in the position that we were in going into that deadline day. If we weren't sitting there shitting ourselves that, you know, three of our best players were going to get, you know, bought for a substantial amount of money, then it would mean that we weren't doing something right. So I look forward to more of those transfer windows. I want to be going into every deadline day concerned that, you know, two or three of our better players might be, you know, sold on for, you know, 700, 800, 900k, because it means that everything's going well. It means that you're obviously producing the goods on the park, because it means that these guys are out there and they're being linked to other clubs. And it also means that, you know, I mean, Alan mentioned it there, it also means that the everything else behind the scenes is working properly, because it means you're bringing those players in or you're bringing them through and they're doing well enough that you can sell them for profit. But you're right, the biggest thing is the fact that we're not just selling for profit, we're selling for you know, a substantial value, and it has been a bugbear in the past. And I think it's a positive thing, because there's no point in fan ownership coming into play at Fir Park and nothing really changes. At the end of the day, there's still a large number of the Motherwell fans who remain to be convinced that fan ownership is beneficial and it's worth a while getting involved. And I think when it's things like this, you know, when a Motherwell fan can see that, you know, with the Welsh Society owning the club, there is a certain different emphasis there. You know, it's perhaps taking more into consideration the fans' views. It's looking at players and saying, well, you know what, we're not going to sell for the 200k we might have sold for a couple of years ago. Instead, we're going to hold out, or we're not even going to hold out, we're basically going to say, this is the price that we want for this player. And if you don't come in, if you lowball us, we're not going to wait until, you know, an hour before the transfer window and decide that that's as much as we can get. We're going to hang on to the player, because at the end of the day, we realise that having those players in the squad is going to be more beneficial in the long run than, you know, an extra couple of hundred grand. So it's all, you know, we mentioned it last week, there is a really good feel-good factor, and I think it's really surprising, because, or not surprising, but it's something we spoke about during the summer, that we had such a poor season last season. To be in a position where, even before we started the season particularly well, there still was a feel-good factor. It was really interesting, because it's not something that you would really expect, having just narrowly avoided relegation last year. But there is, and things like this deadline, they, you know, just, you know, perpetuate that. And you know, but hopefully, you know, long may it continue, because at the moment, the way we're playing, the players we've brought in, you know, the connection that's starting to grow between the players on the park and the fans that's been missing maybe since Stuart McCall left, it's all going in the right direction. So yeah, it was a squeaky bum time at times on that deadline day, but if we can get a deadline day like that every single transfer window, then it means we're doing something right.
Buster, Ben Hennigan was a fairly solid servant last season. I think most of us have already discussed that he was, perhaps without Stephen McManus, wasn't quite as comfortable at centre-back in the latter half of last season. This season he started very, very well. A very nice touch of him to do a wee statement on his Twitter account to kind of thank the fans and thank the staff at Motherwell for giving them the platform, I suppose, to move on to Sheffield United. In my point of view, I don't know if you would agree with this, but it was a guy that I kind of hoped we would lose, because you expected we would lose one, and if we were going to lose someone, I reckon that it would have to be Hennigan that we could replace, I suppose.
Yeah, as you say, you know, Hennigan, Cad and Moult were the sort of the ones that were speculating about whether or not they would move on. Everybody knows how valuable Louis Moult's goals are. He's a great player. Chris Cadden, you know, come through the youth academy. Everybody knows how great a player he is. So if Chris Cadden was moving on, I think his fans would be hoping, you know, as I said before a couple of weeks ago, we'd be hoping we were pushing seven digits for him alone. But you know, to bring somebody like Ben in 12 months ago and move him on, you know, for I don't know exact figures, obviously, but for the rumoured figures, quite a fair bit of money. It's great business by the club. I think if you look at the transfer window as a whole, we sort of really had our squad sort of done and dusted just about by early July, and for there it was just sort of, you know, plugging wee gaps and things like that. If you look at, I think Kipre came in roughly about, you know, the 4th or 5th of July, and from there we've just been sort of picking and choosing, you know, players to come in and, you know, like the Lithuanian guy, I haven't even got to try and say his name, Petra Viskis or something. You know,
you did just try and attempt his name there.
I know. I changed my mind mid-sentence, sorry. But, you know, guys like him, you know, coming in to fill the one or two spaces that we needed. We obviously brought in Liam Grimshaw as well there. Had to replace Ben as well. But I think in the whole, it's been an absolutely fantastic sort of, you know, pre-season stroke transfer window. Then the club and Alan have done really well. Managed to keep who we probably think was our biggest assets. You know, whatever happens with Liam, what happens, but as long as he starts banging in the goals, I don't think anybody's going to complain. But as you say, good luck to Big Ben. He sort of struggled a bit towards the tail end of last season. Came back this season. You know, he was coming on to a game. I thought I was actually. you know, hoping that he wouldn't really go, to be fair. But, you know, these things happen. And as Jay's mentioned as well, it's part of the model. So if we were to lose one someday, you say it's maybe Ben who you would pick out the three. But as you say, fair play to him and good luck.
Alan, the fact that there was a almost what seemed like a contingency plan in place with Hartley coming in, there was also Liam Grimshaw coming in from Preston as well. It seemed like there was almost a backup plan in case perhaps we lost Cadden, perhaps we'd lose Mo. But Stephen Robbins has worked so hard over this summer with, along with Martin Foyle, Keith Lasley. It just seems like we've got such a hard working backroom staff that are covering all eventualities.
Yeah, I want to pay particular tribute to Stephen Robinson in that sense. You know, Stevie's the guy, he's very, very, very intense as a manager. Probably the most intense that I've worked with in terms of, you know, he'll phone me at 11:30 at night because he wants to talk to me about something, or, you know, phone me first thing in the morning. He's in at 8 o'clock every morning. He's one of the last to leave. You know, he's such a hard-working, intense guy. And you're right, he had the backup plan, then he had the backup plan to the backup plan. And that's just the type of guy that he is. And actually, I should say that there was a moment during the last day that I think we thought we weren't going to get any of the two of them, because the little exclusive you can have is that we thought Liam Grimshaw was originally supposed to be coming on loan and was at Penrith when Preston decided they wanted to change their mind and wanted to try and negotiate an exit package with him, so he had to drive all the way back down to Preston again. So there was a wee bit of nervousness from our point of view of whether that was all going to go through, but thankfully it did. And similarly with Peter, you know, Peter was only going to come in if Ben Hennigan left, and obviously we had discussed terms with Blackburn for numerous days leading up to the window. You know, had been speaking to both Blackpool and Peter all throughout that process to keep them updated of what was going on. But, you know, obviously they're going to be a bit nervous, probably, or Peter was probably going to be a bit nervous as well, because, you know, he was very keen to come. So, you know, we also had another backup if Peter didn't work out as well. Our player is still a free agent at the moment. But, all through this window, as I said in the first answer, Stephen has kind of had a mind of how he wants his team to play, both as a plan A on the pitch and a plan B in the pitch, and, you know, moving things about within it and having the players to move it without in it. And it's been the same in the transfer market to a certain extent. He's been very, very, you know, very thorough in his recruitment policy. He has, you know, absolutely investigated all the various players who he's brought in. There's been no stone left unturned, but again, going back to what I said previously, you know, particularly around doing a lot of homework around their personality and how he thought they would fit into the dressing room, he talks internally a lot about trying to replicate some of the things that Sean Dyche has done down at Burnley, where he really brought a strong dressing room ethic where everybody works hard together and there's no bad eggs and there's nobody who's not going to encourage each other at training to get better. And, you know, that's what he's trying to implement at the football club, that there's a real togetherness amongst the playing squad. When fans can see togetherness and amongst the playing squad, I think, or certainly it's our view, or certainly Stephen's view, that then transcends itself onto the terracing, where then fans and players can then kind of work together in that sense, because fans can see players working hard for each other first and foremost. So yeah, it's been quite strategic from Stephen's point of view. As I said, he's extremely thorough. Grimshaw was one that he wanted to get in because he was very, very keen to have some cover on the right side. You know, Richard Tate, I think, has been excellent so far this season, but obviously had a bad injury at the back end of last season. He was also very keen for Jack McMillan to go out and play games. He didn't want Jack Stalling, so, you know, obviously with his loan deal to Livingston, Grimshaw coming in allows Jack to go out and maybe play 20 games between now and maybe late January. So, you know, all those pieces are moving at all times, but, you know, he's very much sitting on top of that and controlling that from our point of view. So, you know, I can't pay enough tribute to him. What I should say, and what he would say, I'm sure, is that nobody wins prizes for having a good window in the summer. Nobody wins prizes for that sort of stuff. We need to go out now and do it on the pitch. You know, there's no point all looking good on paper and it not transcending itself to 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. So, you know, I think what we've done now is we've put that element of the club to bed, the summer recruitment drive, the reshaping of the squad, and now it really is up to us, and, well, the football department certainly, to take that forward now and make that translate into hopefully 3 points more often than not every weekend.
Alan, can I just ask as well,
you mentioned obviously Stevie Robinson with his plans and things like that there. Well, it's a sort of twofold question. Was there plans if, you know, a late bid came in for Louis Moak to replace him? And from what we've seen, as far as I'm aware, there was surprisingly very little interest in Louis Moak. Did that surprise you as well?
Okay, I'll put the first part of that question. Was there a replacement lined up? Yeah. But what I would say is that getting strikers who score 40 goals in two seasons, they don't grow on trees at the time. So, I think Lou, in my opinion, personally, this is just more personal one, Lou's probably going to be the hardest to replace of the three.
Yeah.
Strikers are you know, gold dust, and that's why everybody wants one. And that's why we value him so highly, and that's why we you know, made that clear to him, and I've made that clear to him, that if he wants to come and take him off our hands, that the only way that Lou would believe in the club is if somebody came in with something ludicrous, and that didn't happen. The only offer we received for Louis Moak throughout the whole of the window was from Aberdeen, and it was absolutely nowhere near where we'd want it to be. And I mean that respectfully to Aberdeen, it's just they have a valuation of the player and we do, and they were poles apart. So so from that point of view, we had a replacement in mind, but it would have been difficult. If somebody came in the last day, it probably would have been, you know, really difficult for us, hence the reason why had somebody come in the last day, you know, ludicrous offer would have had to have been extremely ludicrous to get him out. In terms of, am I surprised that people didn't come in for him? Yep, absolutely am. I think that Louis must be scratching his head maybe a little bit about how he scored so many goals and played so well and not had people coming in to take him. But, you know, the flip side of that is, you know, playing devil's advocate, clubs maybe sitting looking at his contractual situation and saying to themselves, you know, he may only have 2 or 3 months before he can, you know, negotiate a pre-contract agreement. Yeah. And they might want to be looking at it from that point of view. I don't know. What I can say is, and what Stephen Robinson said towards the tail end of the window, is obviously Louis had told us that he didn't necessarily want to commit to a contract at this particular stage, which we all absolutely respected and understood. And I think you've seen from his performance against Hearts that I don't think it's going to affect him on the puck. But at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean that the club will give up on its efforts to try and tempt him to sign another deal. You know, we'll try and get him, we'll continue to try and get him to sign another contract, you know, because he's a huge asset to the football club. And exactly what Jay was saying too in a previous answer, that in order for this model to work, we need people to be bidding for our players, and in order for people to bid for our players, you need to have assets. You know, I think Chris Cadden's evidently one, you know, people have bid for him already. Ben Hennigan was one and we've sold him. Louis Malt is one whilst we've got him in contract, so therefore, you know, the likes of him and Cedric Kipper and others who I think can be sellable assets for the football club. If we can get Louis to agree to another contract at the football club, then, you know, you very much fit him into that asset list of people who you are able to potentially trade on in future. So from that point of view, we'll continue to try and work with Louis. You know, if he does sign a contract, magnificent, everybody would be delighted. If he doesn't, then as I said to you earlier on, I don't think we have any doubts that he'll continue to work as hard and bust his backside for the team, because A, that's his nature and that's his personality. And, you know, I think he's done that all throughout his time at the club. I think he likes at the club, and I think he likes playing in front of the supporters. And B, if he is going to go at the end of his contract, he's 3 years time, I think he wants to try and earn himself the best move possible. And the way he earns the best move possible is by playing well every week and scoring goals. So from that point of view, it's a little bit of a win-win in that sense for Mullow, because if he signs a contract, you've got an asset. If he doesn't sign a contract, then the likelihood is he's going to be playing and trying his best to get a new deal. So you'll likely have quite a lethal striker playing up front for you. So, you know, both sides have their advantages.
You've always been very honest about your role at the club, and in terms of you sometimes have to learn on your feet. Was there an element of the Marvin Johnson leaving on deadline day last year where I think we would all agree we were caught a bit short? After that, we very much missed Marvin's influence on the team. Was that a lesson that was kind of taken into this window, and there was a determination there to avoid any kind of repeat of that?
100%, and it's a very good point. I think, you know, I remember speaking to Stephen Robinson that last week or two before the window and raising that very issue that, in actual fact, they probably almost nearly got relegated last year, playing 3 or 4 months quite lopsided. And that wasn't necessarily Andy's fault with the club, in a sense that, you know, we held out as best we could for Marvin. We held out as long as we could to try and get the best offer. And you know, the eventual offer we got for Marvin was probably 4 or 5 times the original offer. So it worked in that sense, but because it went on so long, and because I think it's been quite made quite public now that Marvin made it very, very clear to everybody at the football club that he wanted to leave, you know, we were a situation around about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the last day where we were kind of faced with a conundrum in a sense that what do we do? I think what we tried to make clear to everybody at the football club this time around is that that wasn't going to happen again, that we weren't going to allow ourselves to be in that position again and set that marker down quite early. Actually, funny enough, the player who we tried to get to replace Marvin last year was Elliot Frame. We made a late bid to Forest Green Rovers to try and get him out on the transfer deadline day, but it was just about a little bit late for them, and obviously they didn't have time to get a replacement for themselves, so they said no, which meant, you know, really only had, you know, almost from the months of September to when Elliot actually did come in, we had, you know, 3 or 4 months of being quite a lopsided team. So, you know what, yeah, that was very much in the mindset that, you know, if Louis had gone on the last day, you know, you're going to be leaving yourself short if you can't get a replacement, you know, who's going to be in. And obviously then a lot of burden of responsibility falls on, you know, Alex Fisher, Ryan Bowman, even young George Newell. So, you know, that was a huge, you know, huge consideration. And in addition, you know, we talked about it earlier on, the guys, about Chris Cadden's influence. You know, I don't think there are too many players in Scotland quite like Chris Cadden, who are so dynamic, who just get the ball and run, very strong runners, you know, great engine, you know, wants to get in and beyond the strikers or got an advanced position. So again, those types of players are not easy to go and replace at any one particular time, let alone on the last day. So yeah, I think what we made it clear to both the players, the representatives and any interested clubs are that the later that this was going on the deadline, you know, as every day passed, the asking fee went up and up and up. It got to the point whereby on the last day, depending on who the individual was, it was going to take something absolutely ludicrous that, you know, at no point a club like Motherwell could turn down, you know, 7-figure offers that, you know, I don't think Motherwell Football Club or many clubs in Scotland would be able to resist that sorts of money. So, you know, unless that came in, we weren't going to sell the players, and it transpired that it didn't happen anyway. So, yeah, it really was a lesson learned in that sense, for sure.
The transfer deadline day comes under a lot of scrutiny. Personally, I absolutely despise the kind of Sky Sports over the top coverage of it, and people going off their nut that Leicester have signed a left back from Torino or something like that 10 minutes before the deadline. It just seems so overhyped and so kind of ridiculous. I saw there was a Bleacher Report video as well where Sheffield United are actually talking about, the manager's talking about how it's like dealing with the mafia, which I don't know if that's a compliment to you or not. the fact that they're obviously, and then they phone someone to discuss Ben Hennigan, a player that he used to play with, and everything else. How do you kind of feel, A, the deadline day works in terms of, do you believe that it's almost like teams are holding back to do their business at the very last minute, and it causes problems for football clubs in general? And also, how do you feel the negotiations are? Because it seems like a lot of deals, particularly with the likes of Oxford and Aberdeen coming in for players at well below their value, it just seems very bizarre that the valuations are so different between potential suitors and the football club itself.
Yeah, first of all, your first point about the window, I'm not a huge fan of it, to be quite honest. I think I understand why it was brought in. I think it's brought in to try and make some sort, or attempt to have some sort of level playing field-ish, if you can, amongst the season. You know, previously, you know, a club could, if they're struggling with 5-6 games to go, go and add 2 or 3 players, maybe take a risk. And, you know, I remember a couple of years ago in the Vladimir Romanov year, I think Hearts added Craig Beattie, and he scored them the goals. I think it was still within the window right enough, but he scored them, or he might have been a free agent, I can't remember, but scored them the goals to get in the top 6 in the cup final. And I think it ended up that Beachden were got paid or something like that. But, you know, and then, you know, a lot of clubs were feeling quite aggrieved about that situation. So I think the window is designed to try and mitigate against that sort of stuff. But what it does, it tends to do is, you know, in my view, inflate things for people. You know, from my point of view, every year, every time we're doing this, I always say to the manager, whoever it may be at the club, that, you know, in an ideal world, we're not scrambling about in the last day trying to do business. But the nature is quite often that you're almost forced into doing that because A, clubs want to hedge their bets from their own side to not let players out, or B, you get an example like Hennigan where there's a late bid in to your club and you need to then react and try and go and get somebody in. So from that point of view, you know, I would rather not be doing things at the last minute because it does, you tend to mean you have to pay more, or you don't get necessarily the player you want because a little bit of desperation might flash in because there's only a couple of hours left to go. But you know, thankfully for us, we had a little bit of plans in place, so you know, we're well equipped. But had somebody come in for Cadden or Malt fairly late on, you know, I'm sure there'd been a lot of scrambling about going on. From my own personal point of view, why do I think clubs come in with lower offers? I think I said this on, you know, during the summer after Hearts had made their bid for Chris Cadden, you know, which again, from our point of view, was quite far off where we thought the value for the player was. Look, I didn't take any personal, I didn't take anything personal from the fact that it was a lower offer. You know, at that time, Craig and I were speaking and everything was extremely amicable, and you know, he was only, and as I said, I think I said this on BBC Radio Scotland, that I think Craig's only doing his job perhaps. You know, he's only trying to get the player in at the best value they have. It's very frustrating from our point of view that a bid comes in for a player that's very low that may unsettle the player. Thankfully in this situation it didn't, because Chris is a terrific young guy, very switched on, from a good family and good mother supporter as well, so you know, very, very easy to deal with in that sense. But you know, you always worry that these low ball bids come in that unsettles players a little bit, and you know, I have seen that myself in the past with individuals, some of whom we've mentioned already, and you know, it can be problematic. But I try and be relatively philosophical about it, that you know, Craig's only doing his job, or whoever it might be at their club are only doing their job to try and get the best value for their particular club. And similarly, you know, I'm only doing the best for my little football club, or the board are only doing their best for my little football club to try and get as much as we can. And you know, if everybody goes in there with that sort of mentality and with their eyes open, then fine, you don't lose any, you don't, you know, fall out with people, you don't lose any friends, you don't lose any sleep, you just go on with it. And that's the nature of football. Did I wish we were going to get more or bigger offers for players? Yeah, of course. But exactly as what Jay said earlier on, you know, if you were trying to recreate something similar to what Dundee United did, you know, maybe back 5-6 years ago, then the only way really to do that is to be really aggressive in the transfer market, to demand, you know, that sort of money. And all of a sudden your club then starts to gain the reputation that they aren't going to be an easy touch, that players are not just going to walk out the door for any value. And that's what we're trying to create at the football club. And to do that, you're going to have to be brave, you're going to have to knock back offers, you're going to have to you know, take one or two chances here and there. So, and I think we've done that. But you know, in terms of low offers coming in, I suppose it's just the nature of the beast. It's just then up to the club to be brave and be aggressive and say no, and you know, keep having open communication with players and their agents to make sure that the harmony can still be there at that particular point, and everybody knows the model we're trying to work to. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again: we sell a vision to players to come to Motherwell to play well, to showcase themselves in a good environment, and then we'll sell you on. But you know, the key to that equation really is to make sure that when they are getting sold on, they're getting true value for the football club. And if all those boxes are ticked, then I think it can be a good opportunity for plenty of people here. And you know, selling Ben Hennigan coming from Chester a year ago to go to Sheffield United in the Championship for good money is a great box ticker. You know, Marvin Johnson out of Kidderminster 18 months later goes to Oxford, then moves on to Middlesbrough. Great box ticker, you know, and there'll be other ones that'll come up as well in terms of us convincing others to take a similar path. So yeah, it's all a part of the process. We'll not lose any friends over it, but if all of us are low, it's just up to us to say no to it.
The personality side of it seems quite interesting as well. You mentioned Chris Cadden, how grounded an individual he is, Lou Moult as well. That must be a key element in the whole thing, where these guys aren't getting their move, perhaps, or it certainly seems in Lou Moult's case that he did have aspirations to move on, but he's not going to chuck the toys out the pram. He's going to continue working as hard as he possibly can to make sure that, I suppose, that he gets the move to the highest level he possibly can. And the camaraderie is clearly there as well. You watch the games, and when we score a goal, everyone celebrates the goals. It's quite different from previous squads, where there did seem to be a wee bit of a cloud over the team. The atmosphere didn't seem quite as close as it is just now.
Yeah, I don't, I'm I think what I can say, just speaking positively, is I think there is a great atmosphere amongst the squad. I think, you know, we've got a lot of guys who self-police themselves in that sense. You know, as go back to what I said, Stephen Robinson's big part of his recruitment is to try and bring in the right characters to really complement each other in that sense. Just on the point about personalities, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, listen, football isn't like every walk of life. Not everybody's a great guy, and not everybody's, you know, has the same ideals about life. But I think what everybody is there to do is to have a career and play at the highest level they can, and that's totally understandable. Particularly when guys will see some of the money that players are on in the Championship in England and think, you know, I've got a wife, I've got kids, you know, I've got a house I want to have, and I want to have a lifestyle that I want to live. And, you know, I don't begrudge guys that. And I'll tell you what, if you've got players who don't want to achieve that, then probably they're not going to be players who actually fit into our model, but players who want to sell on. Because, you know, to get to that level, you've got to be ambitious, you've got to try hard, you've got to push yourself. You know, and does Louis Malt want to play at that level? Yeah, of course he does. Is Louis Malt good enough to play at that level? In my view, absolutely, of course he is. So, yeah, he's got every right to think, I want a piece of that. So all we can ask of guys when they're here is, yeah, let's achieve that together. Let's us give you the platform and let you work hard to get it. Where it can work is, you know, if the guys have the mentality that says, listen, okay, I'm not going to move now, I'll go on with it, then, you know, I think it'll eventually come. I mean, I can give you an example. We told Ben Hennigan on Wednesday that, look, the move to Blackburn's not happening, they're not coming in with the money we want. Big man, you're going to have to wait it out. It might be January or the following summer. And he went, fine, no problem, easy conversation. Went up to the gym to do his afternoon session. Absolutely no problems at all. No toys at the pram, no issues or problems. Quite happy to stay at the club, prepared to stay at the club. And those types of guys are fantastic to deal with. And thankfully, most of the guys, Louis Moll, is ambitious, but I think is a great guy. He's very intelligent, Louis. Knows the situation that he's in at the moment, knows he's on a good thing in terms of the goals that he scored. So, you know, yeah, he'll be keen to make sure that he maximises all the potential that he has in his career. But at the same time, he knows that Motherwell have been good for him and he's been good for us. And, you know, if that has to last for another 10 months or beyond, then I'm sure that's going to be the case. So, you know, he's fine. As I said, Chris Cadden is you know, a dream from a football club to work with, and in a sense that he's a great kid, comes from a great family, and just to repeat what I said earlier, and very relaxed about his own situation, and I think confident in his own ability as well, and in terms of, I think he'll be patient enough to know that, you know, if my move doesn't come this time, then what I need to do is make sure either in January or the following summer my move that is a really good one, both for the club and himself personally, and he's playing at the highest level he can. So, you know, Stephen Robinson, as I said, has tried to add to those guys we've just mentioned there with other players to come in and adopt a similar sort of mentality. So, yeah, I think that breeds throughout the squad and hopefully breeds throughout the club and into the stands on a Saturday. And, you know, if you can get all that working and pushing in the same direction, you've got a real chance. I think the last time I had that was certainly under Stuart McCall. The last time I felt it, I mean, I genuinely should say this, that going into the Hearts game, I was really, really, for the first time in a long time, I was really confident we're going to win the game. You know, really, really, all week thought, yeah, I really think we can win this. We've not beaten Hearts a long time, but I think we can do it. And it's just that sort of confidence is starting to kind of breed out the club, and that comes from just a group of guys all working hard together and having that good personality you just talked about.
Pastor, we discussed deadline day in a bit of detail and perhaps the guys going out or the guys potentially going out, but the arrivals of Peter Hartley and Liam Grimshaw in particular, who's returned to the football club, a guy that impressed in his first spell there, that seems like a very sensible bit of business, and a guy that I think most of us were very keen to keep a hold of before he Preston stumped up the cash to Man United to take him away under Ian Barraclough. It seems like a positive move and a guy that can provide quite a lot of cover in various positions as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, exactly where he fits in, you know, where he's going to fit in the team, because I think we've got quite a lot of midfielders now. There's quite a lot of guys in there battling for maybe, you know, three or four positions. So it's, and it, you know, Foz mentioned earlier, you can also cover for Richard Tate if need be as well, you know, as well as Chrissy Cadden has done before as well, I suppose. But you know, we've seen him before, we were keen to keep him, as you says, looked a very good player. He was coming onto a game just as he was sort of, you know, plucked from ourselves by, well, you know, from Man U by Preston. So, you know, it's good to see him coming back. I think from, you know, what I read, I think he done done something with Since I Was Young magazine as well. Can't think it was in that anyway. You know, he enjoyed his time here. He seems to from what Fo said as well, seems to be in pretty keen to be coming back here as well. Peter Hartley, I'll be honest with you, I've never seen him before. I watched two YouTube videos of him, but every one of them was attacking. It was in an attacking sense, him scoring goals basically. So I don't know if he could defend, but he can certainly win a header. It looks as if he'll be a fantastic threat in the box. So as you say, it was good to see Liam Grimshaw come back, and as I say, your boy Hartley looks as if he'll be a threat when we go forward.
Flo, what is the script with these YouTube videos? Because Esteban Casagolda seemed to have one where he was scoring goals in the Duchy Park. Is this a kind of common thing in your email inbox every morning where you're getting 2-minute videos of people scoring goals?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, but actually, in amongst the humour, Buster is a decent point. Actually, first of all, you're buying Peter Hartley the defender. We tried to get Peter Hartley, actually, if I remember, in January 2015. I think he was at Plymouth at the time. Just couldn't get him at a particular point. And that was under the previous head of recruitment, Gary Ayres. We tried to get him again this summer. The way our budgets were working at the particular time, certain players, Stephen still had to move on certain players from the club, and we weren't quite able to do that at the time that obviously the decision to make about his future, so he obviously went to Blackpool. So, you know, we've been keen to get him on more than one occasion. You know, what I think we're hoping to give us is a bit of leadership back there as well. You know, we've got defence, Cedric's still quite young, Charles is youngish as well, we've got not many back there really since Stephen McManus has left who can take that kind of leadership role, that kind of organisation role, and that's what I think certainly Stephen Robinson's hoping, the void that Peter O'Ville. In terms of videos, God almighty, the last couple of weeks of the window, you must get 10-15 emails a day, and that's just me. I'm sure guy Martin Foyle, the head of recruitment, gets even more than that. You just get these links, two things you tend to get are links to transfermarkt.co.uk, Joel's been quite interesting, and along with a kind of supplementary video clip. And I think you've always got to be really careful when you see these YouTube clips, because you can pretty much make MD look as good or bad as you want from a football point, particularly guys playing at their level. So you know, you've always got to be very cautious. So now we've not really done too much in terms of recruitment via video, and unless of course it's obviously doing through Y Scout and Instat or whatever it might be that our analyst team used with Martin Foyle to do our additional homework on players. But you know, you get flattered with these things quite a lot. I'm sure Martin Foyle takes off a lot of the pressure off me in that sense, that he gets most of it. But some weird and some quite wonderful, I have to say.
The kind of point you made about Liam Grimshaw perhaps coming in loan was quite an interesting one as well. It's interesting too that we've only got Peter Hartley on loan.
Yep.
That's the only player in loan. You look at previous squads, have quite heavily depended in the loan market. It's quite good to see that the fact we've got everybody in our squad kind of tied down to a deal to the football club. So if they're performing well for Motherwell, then again, the vision thing comes into play as well. Was that a kind of objective coming into this transfer window?
100%. Stephen wasn't keen to have that many loans involved in the football club for two reasons. First of all, the one that you mentioned there. I mean, listen, we were going to get Liam on loan because we thought that was probably the only likely way we were going to get him, given his terms and conditions down there. But the Preston had their own idea about what they want to do, which is fine, and we obviously just were able to take advantage of that and get him on a permanent. So you know, that's fine, and obviously signed an initial 1-year deal, but if he comes in and does well, then you know, certainly everybody at this stage is open minded to take that further. In terms of loans, I said deliberate from Stephen's point of view, didn't really want to fill it with too many players on loan. We've been in that situation in the past, and it can often go one of two ways. I've always found loans tend to work when it's maybe one or two at the higher end. If you think of Djukovic and Ruddy and guys like that who've come in, Nick Blackman come in and done really well, one or two other examples. But what I should also say is the landscape, even in the time that I've been at Motherland, is changed. That, you know, 10 years ago you could get a Djukovic and you could get a Ruddy from a Premiership club, and you know, those guys were available, guys who are kind of flipping on the first team almost. the way English football's went, particularly over the last 5 years, where the money has just become astronomical, that it's now increasingly difficult to get guys of that sort of Jukovic, Ruddy, Blackman standard, where guys who are maybe been in and out of the first team or have played, moved to Everton or whatever club it might be for a fee or something along those lines, because these guys now are on 20, 25 grand a week, you know, and it's just impossible within our constraints to actually give them something that, you know, a club like Everton or any other Premiership club for that matter may find acceptable. We're paying nothing like that, as you can, everybody would absolutely imagine. So, you know, I think probably those days of getting those types of players from that level on loan are probably now limited, just because of the way the markets went. So there's a combination of two things, really, to make sure that if the model we have is to try and develop our own players. I mean, we were offered a couple of players on loan, younger players from either down south or one or two teams from Scotland, the kind of bigger clubs in Scotland. You know, I remember Stephen having a conversation with me that there's no point really us developing another team's young players when we have like Alan Campbell, or we have David Turnbull, or we have Shea Gordon, or whoever it may be, Jack Millen, to develop ourselves. So we're going to play young players, we might as well play our own young players, because you're going to get mistakes off young guys. That's the nature of putting them in the team. So if we're going to do that, then we might as well be our players. So, you know, that has been both deliberate and forced, in a sense, in ours. It's just a kind of changing map of how the loan system works to get guys that we used to get in previous ones is becoming increasingly difficult. And if you actually look around the teams in Scotland, there are very, very few now who are managing to take loans out of the Premiership, and it tends to be for that reason.
That kind of takes us on nicely. We'll discuss the Ambrew Cup game against Crusaders in just a wee second, but there was also players going out on loan. Jack McMillan, the goalkeeper, which I can't remember his name, which isn't very good. But the last time you were on, we were discussing Project Brave in quite some detail, and the complexities coming with that, the point scoring situation as well. It's quite notable that we've got maybe now 5 or 6 players out in development loans. Obviously, it'll be fantastic for the guys to go out there and get experience, but I suppose it also kind of ticks the boxes as well, which we've talked about earlier in the podcast as well.
For sure. I think the first and foremost is for the guys to get experience. You know, the MPOs, the MPOs of the measured performance outcomes from the SFA are probably secondary to that sense. So it may not be for other clubs, but certainly is for us. Ours is really about, particularly for guys like Jack McMillan or Rowan Ferguson, that, you know, these guys have had their taste of first team football, and the worst thing you can do is what happened to Dom Thomas, really, is that guys come in for a bit, they have an initial burst, and then it really just dies away and you can't get that development. Whereas if you flip it and look at Chris Cadden went to League 2 with Albion Rovers, won the title there, within 6 months was playing regularly in the first team, and, you know, a bit like Mark Reynolds before him, you know, since being into the first team, Chris has virtually never missed a game. So from that point of view, we're trying to have more Chris Caddens rather than Dom Thomas's in a sense of how their career path went. And that's not any disrespect to Dom whatsoever. In fact, Dom actually was extremely unlucky in terms of, he's one of these guys who was probably considered too close to the first team to let out on loan, but maybe not experienced enough to actually play. So, you know, he felt himself in a bit of limbo for a long time. And, you know, it's very, very key for us that we try not to have that situation where possible again. So, you know, Rowan Ferguson, obviously Luke Watt, Jake Hastie, again, all these players have played first team football. It's all very important that these guys continue to get first team football. And you see already Jake Hastie's went to Airdrain with a fantastic start, and I understand, you know, Luke Watt's played really well, and obviously Rowan Ferguson's one their player of the month. Similarly, Jack McMillan, I think, has played 16, believe it or not, first team games for Motherwell, both starting and off the bench, which is more than I thought it was, actually, when we were putting together these kind of little CV to circulate out to the clubs. And, you know, it's really, really important for him to then build on that to make sure that he doesn't stall and doesn't end up there, and we're not looking at him in 8 or 9 months' time, he's still only played 16 first team games. You know, he needs to go to Livingston and hopefully, you know, play 10, 12, 13 games, and then either in January or next summer, you know, he's chapping on Stephen Robinson's door and saying, look, I want to be the next Chris Cadden. So, you know, that's the whole idea. Peter Morrison you know, he's 19, and it's, you know, goalkeepers are very, very difficult to get playing. So he's going to go to Clyde with Jim Chapman, who's obviously employed at the Community Trust as well, so he obviously knows Peter very well. You know, and he's got a fight in his hands, Peter, to try and be the number one there. And for a 19-year-old, that's phenomenal. So, listen, we probably would have wanted more out on loan if we possibly could. But you're also mindful of the fact that you don't just want to flood everybody out on loan, and A, don't have a team to feel competitive if you're under-20s potentially, but also B, you know, the worst thing you can actually do when these guys go out on loan is when, if they don't play, you know, it demoralises them. You know, they're better off being in our team rather than somebody else's team not playing, for example. We've had that situation last year, actually, with Tom Fry, who went out on loan, I think, to Annan, and didn't really play as much as we'd have hoped. So, you know, it's really important for us that these guys actually go out and play. So we try and incentivise the deals that they put them out, that teams are, you know, incentivised from a money point of view to actually play them in terms of their contribution to our club. So that's what we're trying to do this time. So from our point of view, the more that Jake Hastie and Luke Waugh and Rowan Ferguson, Peter Morrison and Jack McMillan are playing games, then the more likely they're going to be first team players whenever it is they return to Fir Park, be it in January or the following summer.
And the game yesterday, obviously none of the three of us guys were present in Belfast for the Crusaders game. A fantastic experience, first and foremost. I saw before the draw you were already kind of hoping that we would draw Crusaders. Stephen Craig and a bit of a homecoming for him.
Yep.
To go 2-1 up and lose the game 3-2 with the last kick of the ball, I suppose the experience very positive for the players, but a very hard one to take, and a hard trip back.
very Mullow FC, I thought.
yeah, absolutely.
yeah, listen, I've actually been reading one or two bits on Bob's today about people talking about, is Iron Brew Cup the right place for under-20s teams? Colt, I hate the word Colts teams, but under-20s teams. It's horrendous. But listen, the experience these guys have when they're playing in those games, you can play 10 development league games and they'll get the same experience. Even if they're playing Queen's Park, you know, it's the whole intensity of the game is completely different. You know, how sharply you need to beat the ball, how quickly and how little time you have on compared to a development league game. So it's been brilliant for us. You know, we've had four games in Iron Brew Cup, and I don't know about you, I think, Andy, you went to the Airdrie game last year, and they were so unlucky in that game as well, probably could have won that as well. You know, had loads of chances, but again, just Airdrie probably a little bit more streetwise to get through, and I think it was probably something a bit quite similar again on Saturday, that, you know, normally when a team is 2-1 ahead with 4 minutes to go, I think the least you're going to expect is a draw, and in that case extra time. You know, I think Stephen Craigan referenced it in the interview after, just probably a little bit of naivety from the young kids, maybe a bit excited at the prospect to come through or whatever it might be. But what I would say is I thought they performed, you know, after being a little bit caught in the headlights in the first half, a little bit where they had to find their way into the game. You know, I thought second half they were absolutely terrific, magnificent, and if any team looked as if they were going to win it, it was them. They were, you know, were opening up the team, getting on the ball, making passes, scoring goals as they did. And it was a joy for me to watch. I was really proud of them, as was Stephen and everybody else, Stephen Robinson, who was there, and, you know, the directors and all that who went across. Everybody was extremely proud of the show they put on. So, you know, they'll gain out of that. You know, even the hard knock of getting beat, you know, they'll gain into it. I heard Stephen Craigan saying before the game, you know, this is only a good experience if you get out and win it. And it's true to a certain extent that obviously the experience is better if you win, and that's a mentality that he's trying to get. That we're not just here for a good time and don't have it on the CV that you play, that you actually go, like, go and win the game. But, you know, when it's all said and done, the experience of actually going to a different country, you know, flying over to the game and, you know, staying in the hotel before and, you know, having your team meeting in the room and all these little things that you don't tend to get when it's just a run-of-the-mill development league game, has been brilliant. And that's the reason why I'm so keen to get one at a Welsh or an Irish or a Northern Irish team, is just because I knew, just from their own experience for the young boys, they had to get to go through that and get that level of interaction, integration with what a first-team game would be like in a big environment. it would be great for them. And, you know, I'm just really disappointed for them that they didn't manage to get through. But I think to a man, every one of them can keep their heads really high and been really proud of what they managed to do against, you know, probably what will be one of the favourites for the tournament. Crusaders are a very, very decent Northern Irish team. You know, I should say they were excellent with us as well. Very complimentary about the club and the players, and, you know, they looked after us very well. So, no, it was a great experience. Beating Queen's Park was brilliant as well. But, you know, disappointed we couldn't get through, but, you know, a terrific experience nonetheless. And, you know, I know the Iron Brew Cup a lot has its knockers, particularly amongst lower league fans, and I totally understand the reasons why. But from our point of view, given we're in it, every time we're in it, we're going to give our best to try and get through and put in the tournament as much as we possibly can. And we've done that, and, you know, gutted not even the next round. But, you know, as I said, the positive experiences the players will take from it, I think, will last them a long time.
And the attitude elements there as well. Ross Clarkson was having a blither with him last week, and he said that the one thing you can guarantee about a Stephen Craigan team is that they'll work their asses off, basically. They're always going to be so, so prepared, and they're going to work to the final whistle. Obviously, yesterday they fell slightly short, but Stephen Craigan, the work he's done with under-20s has been absolutely superb. I still think the Youth Cup final against Hearts a few years ago was one of my favourite Motherwell memories of my lifetime. It was just fantastic to see how well they performed on the big stage, possibly something that we've missed in our lifetimes quite often. Motherwell in a big game coming out on top, it was fantastic. And yeah, he's clearly doing a hell of a lot of great work, and it's proof's in the pudding with the young guys coming through into the first team too.
I can't speak highly enough of Stephen Craigan. I love Stephen Craigan as a player, as all three you'll know. I love him as a guy, and I think he's a terrific coach as well. You go and watch under-20s at times, Andy, and I'm sure you'll agree. There are very, very few teams in the development league that's coached as well as Motherwell in terms of their setup and their formation, and how they've even got daft things like set pieces and throw-ins. You can tell they're a very, very well coached team, and that's all down to Stephen. He's very, very, very thorough and intense. What he does, very, very similar to Stephen Robinson in that sense. That's why, you know, they worked well together in terms of, you know, bouncing off each other from a coaching point of view. So no, I think, you know, we've improved that side of the club drastically over the last couple of years. I think if you look at the standard of the under-20s players we're producing now, you know, they're far more ready to jump into the first team, and, you know, there really is a number of them. I mean, David Turnbull yesterday, I thought, in the second half, ran the game. Looks a real terrific prospect from our point of view. He was actually one we were desperate to get out on development loan, because we want him. We actually think now, and I think every really club now from a coaching point of view thinks he's now almost outgrown the 20s, but he really now needs to be playing games. And obviously Buster mentioned earlier on that actually we are flush with centre midfielders at the minute. Bigramana, Rose, Carl McHugh, Alan Campbell, Cads can drop in there, Liam Grimshaw can go in there, so that there's loads of competition. So, you know, Dave is one of the ones we'd like to have got out, just didn't quite manage it, sadly. But he's real one for the future, amongst numerous other players in there. Obviously, Adam Livingston's made his first team debut. Jamie Millen's made his first team debut. We've talked about, obviously, Alan Campbell was playing yesterday. The lad Newell excites us all the time. I mean, really high hopes for George Newell. I think he can be the rough diamond for us, just wait to see him go over the weeks and months ahead. So, you know, I've probably missed out players in there as well, but, you know, there's some real assets for us there going forward. Really excited about what they've managed to do, both in the Youth Cup and the Iron Brew Cup and the Development League. So, you know, that's one side of the club that, you know, really takes satisfaction. It's going quite well at the minute, and, you know, we need to try and get more of these in as time goes, and we'll continue to do that. You see Ross McLean, you know, get on the last couple of weeks as well, been playing. Alan Campbell's forced his way back into the team, which has been brilliant. So not loads of positives there from the youth players coming through, and that can only be good for the club.
Just in regards to that as well, there, Flo, is there like such a thing in this country as like an emergency loan? Can, like, for example, David Turnbull go on loan in the middle of November?
Yeah, the only slight issue with that is, though, Buster, that he, if that happens, he's not able to play for our development team.
Right, okay.
The good thing with development loans, which has to be window to window, is that they can continue to play for your 20s. So, not that you want to overbum these guys out, but what you don't want to happen is that if a player goes on loan, for example, Tom Fry is a good example. Tom Fry had went on loan to Annan, as I said earlier, didn't play many games, but the good thing is, because it was a development loan, he could still play for our 20s, so he's still getting football in that sense. But what we want to actually do is put them in development loan to actually play games in the first team. But the development loan gives you a little bit of safety net. They changed the rules in development loan this year to make it under 23s, which was a very, very welcome from our point of view. So Rory Ferguson could go development loan, Jack McMillan could go development loan, whereas had this been last year, the two of them obviously wouldn't have been able to under the same set of circumstances. So that gives us a little bit more flexibility to get these guys out. But Davey's one that I think when it comes to January, we'll probably look to try and get him out, because he is absolutely ready to be playing first team football, and playing first team football at a very good level, because technically on the ball, he's as good as MD of the club in that sense. He's very, very cultured, feet, drops his shoulders, can play, really, really good player. So he's one that's really, really exciting. We've got him in a long term contract because we've got high hopes for him. So from his to be, bear in mind he's just 17 as well, he played in the Youth Cup final, he'd not long turned 16 at that point, so still very, very, very young. Two or three years JK stays as well, still with 3 years under 20s as well to go. So these guys are all tied down into long contracts. It's been a part of the model that Jay was talking about earlier on, to secure these guys down to longer term deals. Again, something that I think we've been as supporters probably been frustrated with in the past, that we've lost guys for contractual situations at the end that not managed to maximise it. So yes, we have got one or two 1 year deals in the first team, but most of our young players are tied down to 2 or 3 year deals, and that's very encouraging.
Jay, sorry, I know that for the last 20 minutes me and Alan have just spoken and no,
you've been trying. Me and Bastard are just listeners.
I'm just making sure you're still here. I wasn't actually wanting to ask you anything. The weekend, and back to domestic matters in Kilmarnock at Fir Park. We seem to have quite a nice wee run of home games, but obviously the momentum from the victory over Ross County, the victory over Hearts, the positivity of the transfer window and the way the club are operating, it's kind of, you just kind of wait to get back to it, to be fair. It's like, it's very unlike the last couple of years where things have been a wee bit more downbeat and doom and gloom, but there's a real buzz about the club just now, and the football in the park's been very entertaining. It's a game to look forward to. Obviously, we've got pals from Kilmarnock as well, which it's always nice to beat them.
Well, no, you're right. I mean, we mentioned it last week in the podcast as well, just the idea that, when you support a team like Motherwell, there will be spells where it feels more of a chore. There might be the odd game where if you didn't have a season ticket, you wouldn't be there, because it's just, you're more going out of duty rather than anything else. And I think you could apply that to the last couple of years, long spells under Ian Barraclough, long spells under Mark McGee, where you were there just because that's what you did. It was either because, your mates were going and you fancied a beer, or you were just there, you're a Motherwell fan, you're there to support the team. But there wasn't that buzz about going along to Fir Park. And I think that's back, for so many different reasons, even like little things like, having the best pitch in Scotland, just little things like that. When you throw them into the mix with a lot of new players, all of whom seem to be playing for each other. That's been mentioned earlier. Even just, I think it was yourself picked up on it quite early on, the way in which goals were being celebrated, just even during the cup competition, the group stages, the fact that every single player, was around celebrating goals. Like Sakadin and Gail Bigoriana going mental about, goals. It was just always everybody was celebrating together. The connection between the fans and the players, that feels as though it's, starting to get somewhere again. And you're right, there is a genuine buzz about going back to Fir Park every week. And then obviously, that'll involve away games soon as well. But as you said, a wee run of home games, there is that momentum. We spoke last week about whether the international break would maybe, scupper the momentum a little bit. But, momentum like that, it's down to the team, it's down to Stephen Robinson and his management team to keep that momentum going. And I think when you throw in the kind of widely accepted belief that we have had probably the best transfer winter, the best deadline day in Scotland, I think that adds to the momentum rather than detracts from it. And I think that we can go into Saturday's game full of confidence, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves too early, but I think we're already at the stage where when we're going into a home game against Kilmarnock, I'll be going along with the game expecting to win rather than just hope.
Alan, I know that you've said before that you managed to temper kind of excitement of wins now and kind of just take it game by game, but you must be feeling the kind of enthusiasm and the buzz that's around the club. You look at the fact that there was 4,000 home supporters at the Hearts game as well. The people are coming back to Fir Park. Your background team, like we discussed it with Lewis Irons the other week. It's even just silly things like coming home from a game in Ross County, you're 2 o'clock in the morning, and you're already seeing the post-match interviews and everything else. Everyone's clearly knocking their pan in for this football club just now. So, and
yeah,
it's nice to see yourself personally. Like, we've watched on, sometimes kind of despondent at the stick and everything else that comes through social media. I guess it's part and parcel of the job at times, but there is a real positivity, and it was nice this week as well, I must say, personally, to see you getting a few pats in the back as well from some surprising people.
Yeah, unusual, but listen, I take it for what it is. You develop a thick skin doing this job over a number of years, and listen, I think what people always think of me, hopefully, is that they always know that I'll try hard as I possibly can, and you mentioned the staff there at the club. I would definitely say I've been at Motherwell 10 years this September the 26th, I don't know the day exactly, the 26th of September 2007 is when I started. So
that's Nicola's birthday, in case she's listening to this, by the way. I'll mention that.
I never knew that, actually. There you go. I never knew that the day correlated together. So, listen, I've had 10 years at Motherwell Football Club, which is staggering for me, I think. The point I was going to make there was that I've never been more happy with the off-field staff that we have at the football club than I am at this particular point. I think I've managed to improve massive amounts of the area of the club. There's some really, really strong people in there. People, if they're not Motherwell fans, bust their backside like Motherwell fans. And for the guys who are involved in the club who are Welford supporters, you know, they all, you know, go over and above. Well, over and above the call of duty to try and make it better. Just on the point you raised about excitement or the buzz, you know, I kind of referenced earlier on that, you know, all through the week leading up to the Hearts game, I was excited for the game, and you know, I really genuinely thought, look, we're going to win this, we're going to beat Hearts, we're going to take this on again, and probably that's the first time, probably since the Stuart McCall era, that I actually genuinely really looking forward to the game, thinking we're going to win it. Because 10 years in a football club would make you a bit of a pessimist. But, you know, I don't know what it was, I just really feel it. And, yeah, I'm getting the same buzz, even though we're sitting here, you know, in the lead up to the week to the game, you know, really excited about the Camano game as well. Obviously, there'll be a few ex-Mullow players in the Camano team that will make it a little bit juicier as well. No doubt, but you know, from that point of view, you know, I think we've added to the squad since the break, since the last game against Hearts, as Jay mentioned. You know, I think Hartley and Grimshaw will enhance the squad. You know, obviously Ben Gowan getting good value from. So, but you know, I think we've replaced well, hopefully. So yeah, listen, I'm really, really excited about the game on Saturday. I'm praying that we can win the game, you know, make it three wins from three. God, I can't remember last time we won three home games on the spin. I'd probably need to go back and dig out that stat when that last was, but it'll be long overdue if we could do it. Albeit, I don't think Kilmarnock will be an easy one. They've not had the best of starts, but at the same time, if you remember back to the game, we beat them at the back end of last season. I think they popped us to death for about 45 minutes, you know, couldn't get the ball off them. So, you know, plenty of good players in there. And obviously, Dom and Lee will be right up for it to try and put one over us, which is natural. So, you know, it'll be a challenging game. I don't think there's much between too many of the teams in the Scottish Premiership. So, it's about who can be there on the day and do it. And just finally, the point you raised about the tendencies, I've been really, really pleased with the way we've had a great response to the season tickets. We're about 600 season tickets up on last year at the same point. We're just short of 4,000 season tickets, which I don't know if we've ever broke 4,000 season tickets. I'm not entirely sure. You go back and look at the records. So we could be, you know, I think we're about maybe 100 short of 4,000 at the moment, which for a club of our size is just unbelievable. And yet, okay, a lot of them are the new kids offer that we did. But, you know, those kids are just as important to Motherwell Football Club as any adult, because with those kids, they'll be sitting here talking probably in podcasts or whatever technology that exists in the next 20 years' time, about Motherwell and these guys, you know, going every week and putting their money in the club. So these are extremely important to us. So, you know, 4,000, over 4,000, 4,100 actually against Hearts was you know, absolutely delighted. Again, one of the biggest home attendances we've had, and that was in the back of the Rangers game where we had just short of 4,000, which normally, I mean, we've had Old Firm games, or games against Old Firm teams, I should say, at Fir Park, and we've had less than 2,000 fans. So to have almost double that, I think hopefully just shows that people are a wee bit enthused about coming back to the game, that maybe like the ticket deals we've done around season tickets for the youngsters, maybe like the cut of Stephen Robinson's jib, or maybe, I don't know, whatever reason it is that they want to come back, you know, I'm delighted with it, and hopefully, you know, we'll see we'll push it hard this week in terms of tickets and guys come out to the games, and if we can build on 4-1, which we had at the last game, and get it even more, then brilliant. I'm absolutely delighted, and if we can go and do that and then beat Kilmarnock hopefully with a good performance, then we, you know, when we're back at Fir Park for the Aberdeen game, I think the cup game is the next one, you know, hopefully we can get a really good attendance at that game as well. So, you know, September's going to be a big month for us. We've got, you know, important league games. We've got a massive cup tie against Aberdeen as well, which could, I mean, if we win that, you know, in terms of finances for the club, etc., but also more importantly, actually, the starting to really get butterflies in the stomach if we've been in the semi-final of the League Cup competition. You know, that'll just hopefully build on all the things we've been talking about over the last hour.
Buster, just kind of heading towards wrapping up, but everything that Alan says there is just, it kind of gets me excited. We are just in such a positive place just now, and long may it continue. But again, and it's not a kind of kiss arse exercise, but the work behind the scenes is just really, really positive just now, including the work of the Welsh Society as well, who are really, really, everything just seems quite positive. It's just, it's hard to kind of to comprehend, given that the last season was so poor on the park, to turn it around in such a short period of time, it's great.
It certainly is. You see, everything you hear is basically, you know, positivity coming out of the club. So it's, you know, the one place you want the positivity to end up is on the park. So yeah, hopefully we can pick up a couple of league places for last year. I mean, I think we finished ninth last year, but you know, we all know we struggled near enough second bottom for the last couple of months. But I think we finished ninth. But if we can 8th, 7th, you know, dare I say it, top six, whatever. You know, you would just have to take it one day at a time, one game at a time, basically, and see what happens. But you know, all the positivity coming from, you know, the actual background of the club, hopefully, you know, pushes itself into the park and the results start to pick up. Well, I say start to pick up. We've obviously been doing no bad this year, but you know, I hope that continues, basically.
Do you know, it's amazing for me, though, just that you say that on the pitch. I was having a conversation with Keith Lisley a couple of weeks ago. I was actually asking him about Mark McGee and what it was that Mark McGee transformed in that summer of 2007 that changed it from a team who were struggling into a team that finished eventually third and probably gave Motherwell, you know, one of the most exciting seasons on the park, if you remember 2007-08. Yeah. And he said to me that the thing that Mark changed at that point more than anything was the mentality of the club. That the club's mentality was about, actually, no, we're not going to accept just being 9th or 10th or staying in the league and that's a success. That we actually wanted to change the mentality to actually say, no, do you know what, no, we are a top 6 club. No, we are a team that can go and fight and play in Europe. We are a team that hopes, we've never done it unfortunately, but a team who can hope to get in the cup semi-finals and finals. And that really struck a chord with me, and you know, that's something that, to be fair to Keith, he's really been impressing on our players, that, you know, let's not try and just accept battling at the bottom as a staying up as a means to success. Let's just try and change the mentality and go back to what the mentality used to be, where, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, everybody who was sitting having this conversation would have thought, you know, Motherwell finishing low in the top 6 would have been a really strange situation. And I keep saying football's changed in those 4 or 5 years. Of course there are, you know, a lot of bigger city clubs have sorted themselves out, but you know, if St Johnstone can finish top 6, if St Johnstone can get into Europe, if St Johnstone can get to cup finals, there's absolutely no reason why Motherwell can't. So from our point of view, we try to rechange that, or you know, return the mentality of the playing staff and the management staff and all the staff running the club, and hopefully eventually the supporters, into this whole thing where, do you know what, if everybody does work hard, if everybody can be positive, if everybody goes into the mindset thinking, do you know what, we can be a top 6 club, we can achieve, we can get to Europe again, there's no reason why we can't. Is it going to be difficult? Absolutely. But if you never, you know, achieve or attempt to achieve these things, then you never will. So from their point of view, you know, that's been Lazzy's real kind of mantra over the last couple of weeks when I've been speaking to him, what he's been trying to impress on the players, and just, you know, finalising on that with Buster's point, you know, I don't see any reason why, there's no reason why we can't, you know, it's not going to head of ourselves by any matter of means, and we all just to get in the game, but let's try and change that mentality again, let's try and go back to a situation where we can be a club that fights at the right end of the table and kind of produce exciting players to sell on. You know, I don't see any reason why we can. Everybody off the field is going to have to work harder because we aren't backed by a benefactor. We haven't got somebody who can just top in loads of money. You know, the fans and the society put in, you know, six figures every year, and that's unbelievable for a club of our size. And, you know, that can only grow and get better, I think. But, you know, let's together, the supporters, the club, the players, everybody around about it, let's just try and get back to that mentality again where actually where we can finish in the top six, we can get to cup finals, we can play in Europe, we can achieve all those things together. And I think if everybody sticks together, the punters, the players, the management staff, the board, the society, everybody, the community trust, everybody works in the same direction, that we can achieve that. And, you know, that's certainly going to be the aim going through the season, is to try and get back to what this club had 4 or 5 years ago, which was a club that, you know, can really compete at a right end of the table. And, you know, hopefully the start we've made can be a good springboard for
it. Thank you very much for your time tonight. It's massively appreciated. As I say, it's not a kiss arse exercise, but I think everyone's hugely impressed by the work you continue to do for the football club and the direction the football club's going in. So long may it continue, and let's hope that come Saturday we're another 3 points better off as well.
Fingers crossed. Thanks, guys.
Jay Buster, thanks again for your time, guys.
Cheers.
No bother, thank you very much, and cheers again for.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you, goodbye. See you.